Many people are concerned about how the Supreme Court has ruled and will rule on important issues involving consumers, workers, and the environment. Joanne Dorashow is the executive director of the Center for Justice and Democracy at the New York Law School. She spoke with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg about the attitude of the court on certain types of cases and what that has meant and might mean for the country in the years to come.
You're concerned about some of the cases that are going to be coming before the U.S. Supreme Court. What do you think the most significant of those cases are?
Well, we did a review of this last term, as well as taking a look at the cases that are scheduled already for argument for this term. And, you know, there's just been a general tendency in this court to accept corporations, corporate views of things. Our organization focuses on civil justice and regulatory type issues. So they're a little bit under the radar for a lot of people. You know, most people know about some of the really bad things that this court has done in terms of Dobbs and so forth. But these are cases that deal with public protections, individual rights, civil rights, many environmental cases, securities, class actions, Title VII employment type cases. And those are the cases we're looking at. So we did a review of a bunch of them for the last term. Many of them were very radical in terms of how they disrupted years of decades of laws and court decisions.
Although the court's been ruling in favor of corporations for a while now, right?
Yes, they have. There's no question that Roberts Court has been, you know, that's been their trend. This term, though, they sort of took a more radical approach and really disrupted decades of established law, which they're not supposed to do. But this court, of course, doesn't really care about what prior decisions have told them to do. So, I mean, there are a few cases that were really quite radical, I would say, in terms of what's going to happen now moving forward. And I can kind of list a couple of them if you like. Even one of them, for example, there's been a long-standing tradition and legal practice that if there's a agency regulation on the books that protects the public, an environmental regulation, for example, in order to keep people from endlessly suing to challenge a regulation or keep a company from doing that, there's always been a 6-year statute of limitations, meaning people have 6 years from the day that the rule is established to sue. And then it stops so that it's not completely disruptive moving forward. But what this court did in a very radical decision called Corner Post is decided that 6-year statute of limitations will start whenever anybody is newly injured. So that basically means anybody can sue forever to challenge a regulation. That's very radical. You know, the implications, not only for the public, but for the courts, it's pretty significant.
What about class actions? Did they rule on that at all? I know it's been a big conservative issue to try to prevent those whenever possible.
You're right. I mean, luckily this term, what we look at is class action cases as well as forced arbitration cases sort of together. Forced arbitration, these are the clauses that are now in so many contracts, everything online, your credit card, your cell phone, your bank. Basically, if you have a dispute, you cannot go to court any longer and you can't join with others in a class action. And this Supreme Court, and beginning with the Roberts Court, has upheld these kinds of clauses as constitutional, even though we have a Seventh Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which preserves the right to jury trial in these kinds of cases. Court didn't care. Basically found forced arbitration that wipes out class actions are legal. They're fine. So corporations now are using them. But there's been so much bad law in this area, as you reference, that there's almost nothing left for them to do that's awful. And so there have been a couple of actually not surprising, but obvious cases that came out on our side this time on forced arbitration, 9-0 cases that, you know, cases that probably should never even been at the court. They were so obviously required that sort of result.
Even Alito and Thomas would agree.
And here's the reason. In some of these cases, they were looking at a very specific language in a 1925 law. So these were, you know, we hear about textualists, these judges like Alito and Thomas looking at the text of the Constitution, the text of statutes, and you know, it doesn't really matter anything other than the actual wording. And there was some wording in the Federal Arbitration Act back from the 1920s that protected transportation workers. So there are some cases brought by transportation workers and also some cases that the court didn't intervene in, where the companies are trying to force them into arbitration. And the court said, no, you can't. There's an exception in this 1925 law for transportation workers. So those kinds of workers get to go to court. And these are cases, like delivery workers or people that transport goods across state lines, trucks and so forth. So, you know, those came out pretty well for us this time, but it's only, you know, very, very, very limited number of cases like that with very specific wording in a statute that came to that result.
How would you compare this court as far as the kind of cases you look at to, say, the Berger Court or the Rehnquist Court?
Well, those are very conservative courts. There's no question that this court is far more radical, I would say, when it comes to protecting corporations and corporate power.
So it's more that they want to roll things back than they want to slow things down? I don't know how
they want to provide corporations with more power and more rights than they ever had before. And I'll give you a good example looking at the Rehnquist and Berger courts versus today. And it has to do with class actions and forced arbitration. Back in those days, there was this concept called federal preemption that when a local jury rules against a corporation, they're allowed to do that. And in some cases, a corporation may have other regulatory authority in an area, but when it comes to an actual jury award, back in the Rehnquist and Berger days, they would uphold that jury award, even though it was in an area that was regulated elsewhere by the federal government. Jump to the Roberts Court, and suddenly those concepts of a jury awarding damages, allowing to proceed in these areas, no longer valid. So they started overturning jury awards. That's very different from the way the Berger and Rehnquist courts looked at this concept of federal preemption. And what the Roberts Court did is all in the direction of preserving and empowering corporations to have more authority and over people's lives.
So does this get back to what you said earlier about ignoring precedent or not taking it seriously?
Yes, this court started ignoring precedent in the preemption area, the area I just described, you know, a decade or so ago. And then it just got worse and worse. And in this term, they then overturned precedent. And the big case that people talk about this term when it comes to corporate power is called Loper-Bright, which basically overturned a decision that had been on the books since the 1980s called Chevron. It was called Chevron deference concept. Basically, back in the 1980s, under the Berger and Rehnquist courts, back then, they decided that it was important to defer to the expertise of federal agencies that would issue a regulation to protect health and safety. And so judges were not really supposed to second guess the agency, or they were supposed to certainly defer to their judgment on things. This term, the court came out with a decision that just reversed that concept that had been in the law for decades, the Chevron deference concept. And now judges are given the authority by the Supreme Court, any judge, including, you know, all the Trump judges, that people will then bring cases before to look at a federal regulation, a public protection law, and the judge will decide they don't like that regulation and they'll just invalidate it. Now, you know, that said, you know, there are certainly agencies that are not so great, and they also are captured by the industries they're supposed to be regulating. And sometimes they don't do the right thing to protect the public. So we may see in this situation some cases where a good judge will make a decision that the agency was not doing its job to protect the public. And ultimately, that will be a good decision. So it's, you know, it's not as black and white as maybe some of the other undoings that this court did. But for the most part, it's generally considered, you know, a terrible thing for the public. And certainly there was a real strong dissent by the liberals on the court on that case.
What about how these court decisions relate to Project 2025, which wants to kind of defang the regulatory agencies, if not abolish them, at least in certain cases? Is the court already doing what people who authored that project want to see, or would the implementation of those proposals in the project make it even worse?
This court doesn't need Project 2025 to defang regulatory agencies. They're all about that. All of these cases are about that. They're all about lessening the power of regulations of agencies to protect people. So whatever Project 2025 has lined up to continue that trend, it's just, of course, going to get worse and worse. But this court doesn't even need it.
Would you say the same about the federal circuit courts?
Well, you know, it depends on the courts, right?
We hear that the Ninth Circuit is a little more to the left, but not on everything.
Not on everything, but there was just a Third Circuit decision. That's the Philly area, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, just came out with a good decision protecting people with a type of pharmaceutical injury. And they, in a positive way, the judges referred to this Loper-Bright case and say, we don't, you know, think the agency did the right thing here. It was like one of the reasons why they allowed the people to continue to sue. So, you know, it does really depend. You know, the Ninth Circuit, has a bit of a target on its back when it comes to the Supreme Court. And sometimes, they don't always do it right, but a lot of times they make the right decision. So, I mean, the court doesn't take every case. I mean, there are thousands and thousands of cases that they just ignore, and some of them are significant, but they certainly have picked a few out this term that have done enormous damage.
And the fact that it's a federal system and a lot of things get done on the state level, does that help matters at all?
State courts are very important, you know, and people really need to pay attention to their state court judges, because there are a lot of cases that should be brought and could be, you know, it's preferable to bring them at the state level. And you cannot bring most cases in federal court. There has to be a reason to bring a case in federal court. So far more litigation happens at the state level. And a lot of those cases don't come anywhere near the U.S. Supreme Court. So everybody's state court judges should be on everybody's radar, seeing who these judges are, how they rule. If you have elections, not every state does, but some do. And also retention elections will come up where voters are going to be asked, should they retain their state court judge? If there are any elections like that, it's really important to do some voter education to understand who these judges are. They have a lot of power in your life.
And in addition to the hope that one might gain from that, is there hope anywhere else? Maybe state legislatures, Congress?
Of course, all of these, there's hope in all of those legislative areas, for sure. We just got to vote the right people in. And we're a nonprofit. We're not involved in elections at all. So when we put out reports, we're doing it as voter education. And that's the kind of thing that we would certainly advocate, is people just need to learn who these candidates are, and are they protecting you? Are they doing the best thing for you and your families?
That's Joanne Doroshow at the Center for Justice and Democracy, speaking with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on October 7th, 2024.